Well, good morning, happy Thursday, and welcome to Perspectives on WFSU. I'm Tom Flanagan. So good to have you at the other end of the radio waves and the telephone line and the Twitter device and the email machine and the Instagram unit and all the ways we have to communicate with each other nowadays. Ain't life wonderful? Modern technology, it's fantastic, especially when it works. 850-414-1234 is our number. Perspectives@WFSU.org is the email handle, and you can tweet us at WFSU Perspective. We have a very, very delightful guest to be here with us today as we go through all the political stuff that we mentioned at the outset of the program and coming off of, we had 2 weeks worth of political perspectives here with the candidates vying for attention and getting their public policy pronouncements out there, and every now and then taking a little shot at each other, but it never got down dirty and bloody as it sometimes does. So that was nice. Everyone was getting along pretty well. But this is a lady who has served on the Tallahassee City Commission for longer than any other commissioner in the entire body's history. She served, as a matter of fact, from 1988 until 2010. And was born in West Virginia, Montgomery specifically, down just a little bit to the right and down from Charleston, the capital of the state. Somehow wound up in Tallahassee, became very involved in her adopted community, and then officially became involved by winning that first city commission seat in 88. She remains an avid student of public policy, also a world traveler, an incredible ceramic artist specializing in wheel-thrown pottery, and she's here with us today. Debbie Lightsey, good to see you, Debbie.
Thank you. It is a pleasure to be back with you, Tom.
Well, I thought maybe with all of the fol-de-rol that's happening, mostly surrounding the city commission, there's not a lot of controversy surrounding the county, a little bit in the school board. They're facing a possible takeover by a charter company of a couple schools here on the south side. But other than that, there's not a lot of stuff. But boy, the city is a seething hotbed of stuff right now. And I thought maybe you could just some overall impressions that you get from all of this, the charges, countercharges, FBI probes, all that sort of stuff.
Well, it's very disturbing to those of us who served with the city so very long and invested so much physically and mentally and emotionally to see it in this kind of a situation. In fact, it's heartbreaking to watch for me. And I'm hoping with this election and a new commission that we can really turn the page. I don't know what the FS of the FBI is going to do. We saw they just closed out the Pons investigation after leaving us hanging forever. I hope that doesn't happen here. I would like to see some conclusion to that, whatever the result is, so that we can move on. But when you have a situation where 3 of the 5 seats on the city commission are turning over, you're going to have a lot of volatility, and it's been preceded by all the volatility with the city manager and the FBI, and we're just living in a very toxic political environment, I think, here, locally, state, and nationally, and we're kind of replicating, unfortunately, the kind of ugliness that you're seeing elsewhere. So,
now, I'm just wondering why it, in your estimation, it has focused so much on City Hall because, as we mentioned, there are people, let's face it, in all levels of government, at all levels of government, and some folks are there for the public service and they don't feather their own nest. If you threw it at them, they wouldn't. And then you got some folks who are always trying to work and hang. I mean, people are people no matter what. And,
indeed.
But you don't have that kind of focus now that, as you said, the Pons investigation is up, and it took FDLE to come out and say that. The FBI will never say it because they can't. But Leon County, they're, if not pure as the driven snow, at least they've avoided a lot of this stuff. But it always focuses on City Hall. At least it has since, oh my gosh, back in what? Since 2000, 2005? You've always had critics that have come out yelling
well,
and screaming.
Well, we have a few persistent, consistent critics who are churning the water and attacking whether there's any grounds for that or not. So it has just created an environment where the dust never gets a chance to settle. And most of these allegations don't turn out being anything, but they're constantly in the air. And I think it has kind of forced the city, the elected body particularly, into a defensive mode and almost like a foxhole mentality. They're constantly under attack, whether there's anything wrong or not, individually and as a group. And there have obviously been some unfortunate things that have happened there. And, you know, the city manager is gone. They're trying to pick a new city manager. But I think the people get worn out and tired under this constant attack. And occasionally a charge will be made and you'll find that there is some substance to it. And that just encourages the critics to keep coming back with something else. So it makes decision-making hard. It makes moving forward very difficult when you're constantly under attack. And no matter what you do, it is criticized. I mean, it's damned if you do and damned if you don't. So I really think if we could all just take a deep breath here, particularly with this election cycle, get some good, sound people in, and step back and give them a chance. Just call a little truce and stop hurling so many attacks and so many insults, particularly of a very vicious personal nature that is so hurtful to everyone, that we might see a real comeback here. But it's hard to do anything, choose a city manager in this circumstance that we're in right now. So time is going to help us with some of this.
Do you think it'll be enough, though, to change essentially the majority of the commission, that could lead to that truce?
I'm hoping so. You know, when I was first elected, we had commissioners that really liked each other and respected each other. And I made lifelong friends on that commission, those original first few commissions. And we respected each other. And we entrusted each other and would assign certain subject matter that people were good at. Dot did the arts, and I worked on the environment, and Steve and Jack McLean did social justice. And so commissioners would just naturally take the lead, and we trusted them to bring us good things, and we would support it and move forward. I see a very divided commission right now, and I'm hoping that with new commissioners in, that they will have an opportunity to start fresh and get back to the time where we respected each other and you didn't feel if you tried to take a hard vote, somebody would stab you in the back later over it. Really, we were a team, and I would love to see that again. Maybe those days are gone forever, but I certainly hope not.
Well, it depends on the electorate, because if a candidate comes out and says, I won't compromise, I will do whatever you, the electorate, want me to do regardless, and if that means punching someone else in the nose, by gosh, I'm there for you. And that then becomes reflected in our elected personnel. It's kind of we get what we vote for. And if we elect people who say that they won't get along with anyone else, that's the way it's going to be.
Well, don't vote for those people. It is up to the electorate. When I was first elected, Dan Clayman, who was the city manager then, and Jim English and Bob Enzer, we had three of the finest appointed officials that any local government could ever have. And they taught me so much about the city. I was a relative newcomer. And they taught me about good government. And the consistent theme from those three was, Commissioner, your job is to leave this city in better condition than the way you found it, okay? You leave it financially strong. You leave it united. And you leave it with its sterling reputation intact. If those three things would govern every decision that we make for the good of the government, for the good of the people, and not about you as a candidate or your chance to win in the next election, if everything was put through those old-fashioned, I know they sound very quaint, filters now, but that's, we did that. We could take hard votes. Even if the community wasn't happy with that decision at the time, Blairstone, Clayman Plaza, hugely controversial decisions.
Oh, I remember the coal plant thing that you were involved with. Oh, my gosh. I thought people were going to pitchforks and flaming torches.
3-2 votes. But the community got through all those. Clayman Plaza is very popular. We don't have a coal plant. Blairstone Road is one of the finest projects ever, if you ask people now, even the neighbors living along it. So you have to have the opportunity to feel safe taking hard votes. And you've got to know that your every vote is about the future of the community, not your political future, the future of the community. And we just need to take a deep breath and try to start thinking in those terms again, the electorate and the elected officials, I think.
Debbie Lightsey, who served on the Tallahassee City Commission from 1988 until her retirement in 2010. Remember, she was not voted out of office. She said, that's it. I'm done. I'm out of here. Is our special guest on Perspectives today. You have a question or a comment, 850-414-1234. You can also shoot us an email, perspectives@wfsu.org. And don't forget, the program is always available for you online, usually within about a day or so after it actually airs on the radio. And you can go to our page, wfsu.org, and pull down the radio portion of that, and there is a list of programs, including Perspectives, and we'll have it up there. You can listen to it again and again. We'll be right back. Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear on the Tallahassee City Commission when, oh my gosh, we had names like, I remember this, Hurley Rudd and Carol Bellamy and Judd Chapman and Betty Harley and all of these. It just washes over you, this
Kent
wave
Spriggs.
Of nostalgia. Yeah, Kent. And boy, talk about world traveler. I tell you, the Spriggs are out and about all over the place. Where was the last trip that you took, Deb?
Well, my last trip was here in the U.S., and I went out to Sedona, Arizona, which is one of my favorite places in the world. I love the Red Rock Canyons and the high desert of the Southwest, and so I'm heading my next trip out to Bears Ears in Bluff, Utah.
Oh, now that is a name that stirs some reminiscences here, especially because it was the focus of, I think, a lot of national news stories about the administration possibly cutting way, way back on the acreage for that monument.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you better see it before it's all gone, huh?
Yes, this will be about my third visit, but if you haven't been, yes, you need to see it before it's the miners and the drillers get in there, and it's no more.
Well, you talked about maintaining relationships and even deep and abiding friendships with some other former elected officials in here. You and former County Commissioner Gail Nelson like to hang out a lot, too, don't you?
We do. We do. We served together for a while. When I first moved to Tallahassee, my house was in the county and was subsequently annexed. But Gail Nelson was my county commissioner. and I got to know her then, and we have stayed friends. And we have done some travel together. We have been to Italy together, and we've been several places in the U.S. Together.
Looking back over, oh my gosh, those 22 years that you spent on the commission, though, what were some of the personal highlights for you? Because you talked while we were off the air here about incremental change, baby steps, if you will, bringing your colleagues and other members of the community along for the ride, if you will, as we evolve this vision of a community. But what do you look back and say, boy, I really rocked that one?
Well, there's a million issues, and there's a million pieces of commission dynamic. I have served on many commissions. Every time one commissioner changes, the whole commission dynamic changes, so you really have to start over building your consensus or getting your three votes. You know, it's all about getting three votes. So I think you have to work hard, and you have to know your facts to be able to persuade people to your position. But that used to be easier than it is now to persuade people with facts. Everything is, you know, a lot of politics and emotion drives issues now. But we made some good decisions. Blueprint 2000, when that was first put into place, that was a huge achievement for this community. When so many communities were rolling back taxes, our community chose to pass an additional penny sales tax to get things done in the community. And all the projects had an environmental component and a social component. So it wasn't just building roads. It was building bikeways and stormwater facilities to clean the water. So it was that was a big achievement. And we adopted Blueprint while I was in office. We adopted the first comprehensive plan. Growth management plan when I was in office in 1990, and the first joint comprehensive plan, still the only joint comprehensive plan in the entire state of Florida, is the Tallahassee-Leon County comprehensive plan. And Marjorie Turnbull was the negotiator for the county. I was for the city. Tom Pelham was secretary of the Department of Community Affairs. And we passed a comprehensive plan that thousands of our citizens sat and wrote and passed it off to the elected body for adoption. So it used to be very inclusive of the community. The whole comp plan right now is being rewritten with practically no public involvement whatsoever. That is just amazing to me. I think we used to do better with public involvement than we do now. It's very time-consuming, but if you get people in and get their view before you do something instead of when you're in the midstream or after the decision, you get a much, much better result. So I think taking the time to really pull the community in, make them feel welcome. And we used to do a lot of that. Meetings were very long. There was lots of animated discussion. We would meet until 10 or 11 o'clock at night. I mean, we met as long as we needed to meet. We didn't meet for 45 minutes and all rushed to get out of the building. So I just think the pace was different and the feeling of inclusion was different and probably better now. And I know the world is a very fast pace and people have a lot of things that take up their time now. But I really think we need to get back to more focus on taking our time, community involvement, maybe smaller projects that are more meaningful out in the neighborhoods and with small businesses here instead of multi-million-dollar projects being incentivized by government. So we want to grow and be in tune with the times, but we need to remember that you don't govern well unless you govern with the community on board with you.
And is that maybe where some of the current problem has come from? Because you hear this from the entire warp and woof of this town right now, they don't listen to us.
Yes, yes. I hear that. I have experienced a little bit of that. And I've got a pretty loud voice and sometimes probably get treated better than your average citizen. But there's a rush to make decisions and to get to be in the big time and get to be a big city and, excuse me, that's not us. You can grow and you can remain vital economically without destroying everything that we love about the place. And I think you do that by taking smaller steps and getting lots and lots of community involvement before you move. And I would suggest this comp plan rewrite that's underway right now is going to have huge implications that the community is not even aware of. And this needs to be opened up and people talking about it. And the neighborhoods need to be brought in sooner in all these discussions. They're feeling threatened now. So I remember when we adopted the comp plan, we went through every single page, spent hours on it. We would spend hours on budget. And the budget hearings are very brief now, and they're just like little summaries, and decisions are made very quickly. And the community doesn't know until after the fact what those decisions mean in their lives. So I think we need to slow down, take a deep breath, take longer at things, invite more input, meaningful, timely input, and we would see a community that's happier, or at least more forgiving of some of the big decisions.
Yeah, because that drove a lot of the discussion, too, that the perception that Tallahassee and greater Leon County was unfriendly to development because it did take so long and it went through all these processes. And, oh, hey, your stormwater plan doesn't quite match the expectations and the rules. You got to come back and redraw. The developers would go berserk because time is money.
Well, you see, I historically, you can track when the attitudes change. I mean, the state dropped out of the comprehensive planning process a while back and took some of the teeth out of it. So it's very hard for local government to fight all these battles themselves with no backing from the state. But if you, in 2008, when we had this recession or mini depression, lost a lot of jobs in this town, no building was happening whatsoever, companies went under. Everybody was desperate for investment, a lot of unemployment in this town. And so we just kind of threw the doors open and offered incentives to development to get something going here. And I just think we've been on that path maybe a little bit too long. We've got lots of stuff going here now, maybe too much, building on every corner. And so I think that attitude of let's not make any obstacles to development, and let's welcome all development. I just think we need to say, okay, we're not desperate anymore. Let's step back and take a more balanced approach. Slow down. We're at full employment here. So I just think the pendulum may have swung maybe too far and too long and needs to swing back a little bit.
Yeah, do you think we have a bubble brewing down there? Every 5 minutes there's another high rise going up.
I fear we do. Who are all these people who are going to rent these downtown condos? We've got empty condos now still from some of the development years back, and I don't see the student population has increased much. So who's going to live in these thousands? Look south of Gaines Street at the number of big student housing units being built down there. Where are these students coming from? I mean, if enrollment's not going up, I think we are going towards a bubble myself. Now, the folks who are pushing this say we're not, and the staff that's supporting this say we're not. But excuse me, I've seen a bubble here before, and it's not there and not there until the day it's there, and then you're in bad shape again with all these vacancies and properties you can't rent, and loans you have to default on. So I'm just maybe a little more cautious and think that might be a better approach right now.
How did you get involved in pottery? Because I didn't know that about you all the years I was covering the city commission when you were there. I had not a clue. Where did that come from?
It may have been just a holdover from loving to make mud pies when I was a kid. But there's something so primitive, so primordial about taking a lump of clay on a spinning wheel and shaping it with your hands. It's so satisfying. So I started about 30 years ago, about 1987, I think, with my first pottery class at the city's Lafayette Arts and Crafts Center. And I am still going there. I picked up pots yesterday. So the city's got a great program there, by the way, and very affordable. Lots of good equipment and kilns and glazes and wheels. And so, but they teach all kinds of classes there. But I have always just loved it. And I think it helps you have a little balance in your life and be not quite so crazy. If you have some outlet for your creative impulses. So I paint a little bit. I love to play with clay.
Well, the first thing that you do when you're doing wheel-thrown pottery is to take the lump of clay and you center it. And so that is, I think, a good analog for some of the things that you're talking about when it comes to governance as well. You gotta keep it centered.
You can't center that clay unless you are centered yourself, and that is your sole focus, and all that static in your mind is put somewhere else for the moment. So.
You had some, you mentioned him before, Dan Clayman, for whom, of course, Clayman Plaza is named, longtime city manager of Tallahassee, left under, shall we say, less than happy circumstances, which was a big surprise to a lot of folks. They thought, you know, this was St. Dan. And, you know, times change and the commission makeup changes, and he was gone.
He had been here 19 years, and the year that he was fired here, he was president of the International City Managers Association, which is the highest honor you can achieve. And so he was very highly regarded. He got caught in a political play, and on a 3-2 vote, he was gone. I lost on that vote, and I've lost on many, many votes. But half of the little phrases, Tom and I were talking on the break, half of the little phrases I use to govern my life and help me make decisions now are still the Claymanisms that I was taught by Dan. But I will tell the community and tell this future city commission that if you have extremely good appointed officials, people of real weight and merit, they can keep you from making mistakes, and you need to rely on their guidance. Choose them carefully. Meet with them regularly. They hear from different parts of the community than you do, and they've got years of experience. And so I don't know that the appointed officials even play an active role now. From what I hear, they don't, meeting regularly with commissioners and giving them the benefit of their advice and guidance. But it's one of the building blocks of good government. And we, after all, have a strong manager, weak mayor form of government here. It's called a leadership mayor. And with all the trappings that it has now accrued, you would think that we have a big city, strong mayor form of government. We don't. Our mayor has one vote on the city commission. He's 20% of every vote, just like all the other elected officials. No veto power, doesn't craft the budget, is the spokesperson, ceremonial head. Read the city's webpage. They describe what the mayor is and isn't. So,
essentially no different than when you were mayor in 91 and 92.
Except it's directly elected now. So it's highly politicized now. It used to be a rotating one-year mayor.
Is that better, do you think?
Well, everybody thought it was way too small town, but I will tell you, if I think it would be a dreadful move to go to strong mayor. I think you get all the isms, the cronyism, the nepotism, the all the isms come along with the strong mayor. And we've got this hybrid mayor now. And like I say, it's the people hold a position seem to promote it as a really big, powerful job. And with staff to match, and I really don't think the level of responsibility in the office supports a lot of that stuff. And I think it gives it just a false notion of what the mayor's position is and ought to be. So I don't know whether we need to go back to a rotating mayor, but we need to have an understanding of what the mayor's position is and what the role is there, and that the manager, you need to choose your manager very carefully, the manager runs the operations of the government, and by charter, city elected officials are not allowed to interfere with that.
And that is, again, a document that was put in place after much, much deliberation and input and a consensus that this is how we want it to work.
Exactly. You just have to have a good manager with a vision for the community and good managerial and operational skills in addition to that, too.
We've got some input that just came flying in by email, which, by the way, is perspectives@wfsu.org. Facebook, too. Mitchell from Facebook wants to know, what is the likelihood of success for this new commission in raising the minimum wage, decriminalizing marijuana, and free college tuition, which we hear talked about on the national level as well as the local level?
Well, I think unless you are a huge city like New York or San Francisco, you're not going to have any impact trying to raise the minimum wage. I think those are all important issues, and I support most of the thrust of these comments, but these are well beyond the purview, of city government. Unless you expect the city through taxpayer funds to set up an account in which to pay tuition, really, free tuition, it ends up being a state role in state education system with the community colleges and the universities. So while we like to hope and pretend that our local officials have a lot of control there, some of those issues just really are not things we can impact effectively.
And perhaps you have, as a city, a little bit less wiggle room than you did when you were on the commission, Ms. Lightsey. We'll talk about that on the other side of this break coming up here. Debbie Lightsey, who was on the Tallahassee City Commission from 88 until 2010, is our guest for the whole hour right here on Perspectives. 850-414-1234 is our number. Or send us an email, perspectives@wfsu.org, or Facebook, too. We're up there, and we'll talk to you more about this when we return. We are back talking public policy and making pottery here with Debbie Lightsey. We're going to have to exchange some glaze recipes here after this is all over here.
I'm not a chemist. I use commercial glazes.
Yeah, and full disclosure, I was a ceramics major in college, but he made us do it from scratch, just like cake baking.
I have done it. I have taken classes at Penland and John C. Campbell where we actually mixed the glazes from scratch. So I've done some of that. It's not my forte.
Well, back again to the public policy. That's a way to mix up some ingredients as well, for sure. But one thing you did not have to put up with quite as much when you were on the Tallahassee City Commission is what we have seen in the past few years from the Florida legislature appropriating more and more of local autonomy, even for charter and home rule type situations like we have here in Tallahassee, than at any time I'd seen in Florida's history, where even if you want to say, no, you cannot have a firearm in Tom Brown Park, the state of Florida says, you can't have anything more restrictive than state law. And that seems to be, infuriating a lot of current local elected officials.
And with good reason. I mean, it was happening while I was in office. We called it the unfunded mandate. That was the old word for it, where they give you a responsibility that the state used to do. They give it to you and they give you no funding to do it. So it used to be a funding issue. But now it is a direct interference in policy issue very frequently. And I would suggest that when they have a little better record of doing well with the state of Florida, they might wish to interfere in our local business. But what is happening is they're getting lobbied so strongly and are, in my view, going with the big money lobbyists that they wish to now pass that policy, that prohibition, down to local government. So it's not enough that they do the state's business. They're trying to infuse what I think are special interest issues down to the local level.
Well, there's been money in politics since forever. I mean, this is nothing new. But when we get into this modern mantra, which you have heard through how many campaigns, we need to run. Oh, God, I remember Judge Chapman. That was part of his deal. We're going to run government like a business. Have we perhaps run government too much like a business? The current One of the people involved in ethics at City Hall right now said, yeah, that was kind of our problem. We did all these deals. We treated, instead of residents and citizens, we treated them like customers, and we got to make the customer happy, and we're going to work out all these wonderful side deals, which in the private sector would be perfectly okay, but in public sector, maybe not so much.
Treating government like a business is a step down and not a step up, in my view. Government has a higher responsibility to our citizens than business does to a customer, okay? Just plain and simple. And government has never been about the bottom line. We're not a for-profit business. We are a service business. And the quality of the service needs to come first. Now, we have to have balanced budgets, and we can't do things that our citizens don't give us the money to do, and they hope we're going to spend every dollar of that wisely. But you have a higher responsibility to citizens. And I'm tired of the run government like a business idea. I never thought it had any validity. And if you see the way the world is operating now under that philosophy, I think there's good evidence that I was right. This is not the way to operate this ship, okay? And money is just way too big an ingredient in politics now, all the way to the huge dark money campaigns on the national level. But look at the local level. When I ran the first time, $18,000. I was a grassroots newcomer. I've been in this town less than 5 years. $18,000 is what it cost for the primary and the runoff. And I was elected out of a field of five. Campaigns now cost $100,000, $200,000. Now, part of that was the fact that we were off cycle. The city commission elections were in March. We were the only show in town. We got all kinds of free media. You didn't have to buy mailers, TV, all that kind of stuff. We got all kinds of focus. And when we moved that to the November general election cycle with everyone else, I voted against that. And I said, all that's going to do is to make campaigns cost 5-10 times as much. We'll be at the bottom of the ballot. We'll be competing for interest in the voter's mind with the national, state, all the way down, judges, constitutional amendments. We're at the bottom of the ballot. This is not good. This is not what we want to see here. We moved it. I lost that vote, too. And now, the community doesn't know is your candidates, most of them, are pre-selected for you by their ability to raise money, okay? Now, there's lots of candidates out there that don't have any money, but they don't get elected either, okay? Your front runners in every one of these campaigns, you'll find, are people who, through name recognition sometimes, but mostly the ability to raise money, they're pre-selected, so you don't even get the people that might wish to run but know they can't raise money. So that move to November did us a lot of harm, I think.
And then the fact that you have to now concentrate on that money-raising component, yes, you have the $5, $10, $50 contributions that come from Joe and Sally Smith, but still, does it make our local political process much more susceptible to the wiles and the whims
of
big government or a big business and these other folks who want something from the local elected body?
It there are only two or three folks in this community that I wouldn't take money from. And I got a lot of developer contributions in my last two or three elections, although I went out still as the Green Commissioner, and you can track that through my voting record. And I used to tell them, you want to give me money? That's great, but I'll tell you what you're getting for it. Good government. Don't give me this money if you expect anything other than a straight-up decision from me on every single thing. And they would laugh. And I said, and you don't buy any access because everybody has the same access, okay? You call us, you know, and you make an appointment or we meet you somewhere. Giving a contribution doesn't give you any more access, okay? That's not how we run our government in Tallahassee. And that was true when I said it, okay? But when I was on the commission, and I had was telling Tom I had coffee with Mark Mushton this morning because we like to get together occasionally and laugh and say, oh, gosh, what the heck is happening? When we were in office, our home phone numbers were in the telephone book, okay? Now, if you go to the city's webpage, the elected official's office number isn't even published, okay? You have to go through the receptionist or through their aide. And when you go to City Hall now, you not only have to go through the metal detector, you have to sign in, and they call to make sure you're telling the truth about where your appointment is, and you get a visitor's pass, and sometimes they actually escort you there. Well, this says something to our citizens, and it's not a good message. I know some security measures are necessary, but this distance, these layers between the citizens and their elected officials. You used to be able to walk into City Hall, and you could still do that now using a metal detector, and go up and sit in the city commission office up there. Citizens would come in and sit and say, I want to see the first commissioner that's available. And we'd give them a cup of coffee and let them sit there. But now you have to arrange in advance and go through two or three layers to make that appointment, and then you have to go through all this security, and sometimes you're escorted in and out, and I'm not sure all that's necessary, and it doesn't send a happy message.
Tony joins us on Perspectives, speaking with Debbie Lightsey. Hi, Tony. Thank you for your patience. Welcome.
Thank you very much. The reception that I'm getting over the radio is not ideal, and I think it's probably because of my hearing. So I'm going to pose my comment and question.
I took my hearing aids off. I can sympathize with you because I was afraid I wouldn't be able to hear either. So go for it.
Well, you know, I'm going to get some hearing aids, but it won't be until next year. It's just not in my budget, and they're not cheap. So that's a good segue into my question. You know, it's not in my budget. I noticed talking about some of your highlights. And I was wondering, do you consider in those highlights the philosophy, if you will? Well, I'm sorry, let me back up. I'd like you to comment on your view of whether or not you would consider yourself a fiscal conservative, and if so, why, and if not, why, and be specific on it, and then segue that into your comment about government has never been about the bottom line. And I'm thinking, you know, I just can't get my mind around the concept of taking an approach, or at least as you say, government is never about the bottom line. I think that view has contributed to the escalation of the cost of government, not only here in town, but in our whole country, and specifically within our community here. As you watch each year, the city and county budget increase, and it's just like, you know, there's just no end to it, and there's no end to the resources that we've got available. And so, I'm a little passionate about that. I consider myself a fiscal conservative, but yet there are other issues that are socially that I'm not as conservative outlook on that. I'm neither a registered Democrat nor a Republican, I'm non-affiliated, I think is what you call it. So if you would expound on that, Debbie, and I'll look forward to your comments. Thanks.
I'd be happy to. When I say government's not about the bottom line, my next comment was you have to stay within your budget. I was a fiscal conservative, and I squeezed every little dollar for everything I could squeeze out of it. And I remember during budget hearings saying, okay, we can spend, we got a dollar, and we can spend it here or we can spend it there. We can't spend it both places, okay? So this is a tough decision. We can't do everything. We don't have the money to do everything. So I was a fiscal conservative. I'm a social liberal. I'm portraying myself sort of the way you portray yourself. But when I say it's not about the bottom line, we're not a for-profit organization. You never make money off of your police force. and you never make money off of your park and recs operation, and you never make money taking care of the roads. So you can't operate it on that basis. Government does things that the for-profit industries never wish to do because there's no profit in it, but these are all needs in the community that have to be filled. But I was absolutely a fiscal conservative, and they used to laugh at me at the budget hearings that the number of questions I could ask and the number of times I would meet with staff before we made the big budget decisions. So you have to be very careful. I think in government now, there's so many more sources of revenue. I mean, you've got the city budget and you've got the county budget, but now you've got the CRA budget and you've got the blueprint budget, and there's just money flowing everywhere. And I think when you've got that many sources of revenue, that sometimes you're not as deliberate as you ought to be in the spending of those monies. And I've been involved in some blueprint issues recently, and recommended one of the projects that got funded in sales tax extension, which was my favorite unsexy topic, wastewater and sewage treatment. So I'm still involved, but there's a lot of money out there now. And I think when you've got a lot of money and a lot of pots to choose from, sometimes you just don't pay as much attention to each decision. So I would like to see everybody get back a little bit to spending more time on this, getting more citizen involvement. I've seen Blueprint, the IA, make decisions that the Citizens Advisory Committee had voted against and just ignore that. I mean, that doesn't send a good message to people that you asked to serve. So I think even when you've got a bunch of money to spend, you still have to be careful with every dollar of it.
Yeah,
and make hard choices.
And you need some, I guess, success stories. I'm thinking specifically of a very contentious development. Now, this was on the county side. They had to deal with that. It wasn't a city deal, but this was out at Crump Road, where the gentleman was going to put a multi-faceted convenience store and gas station out there, and the people just said, no, we do not want it. And the skids had been greased.
Keep it rural, it was called.
Yes,
I know a lot
exactly.
of the people in that organization.
Precise. And by gosh, they did it right. It wasn't just we're going to wave signs and yell and scream. They met with the developer and met with the planning and growth management folks and got their ducks in a row. And by gosh, he wound up being happy. He, I think, got a pretty penny for that parcel of land, and he was happy to do something else. But people can make a difference. And that is, I think, the main lesson that we have to learn in regards to local government
issues. See, I came at this from the people side, not the politics side. I was asked by the neighborhood and environmental community to run at a CONA, Council of Neighborhood Associations, meeting in December of 88, and the election was just a few months down the road. And I was a neighborhood association president. So I came from the people side of this and not from any special interest that had any money in the game. You know, the neighborhoods and the environment are special interests too. They're just not funded special interests. Yeah, you got to get the people in there, and all these budgetary decisions. There's an urge to get the money out there and look like you're doing something constructive in the community, but that urge shouldn't drive you to make decisions prematurely, in my view. I just think you just have to be deliberate with every dollar.
Debbie Lightsey, we only have a few moments left here. I know that you had mentioned that your wisdom and experience has been sought by a number of candidates, not mentioning any names or races, but just generally, what kind of advice are you giving these folks who are running to become the new city commissioners here in town?
Know something before you get out there, okay, so you don't have to invent answers.
Step one.
Be informed. It always stood me in good stead. Be informed and talk to other people. Have a reason for running. My first question is, why are you running? Why are you running? If the answer is, I've always wanted to be an elected official, stay home, okay? That's not a good answer, okay? And the generic, I want to give something back to my community, isn't a good answer in my view either. Something needs to have driven you to do this. And you had to have had some interest that you have pursued in the community that brought you into the government sphere where you thought you could make a difference. So work hard, have a good reason for running, and be informed before you get out there.
Words of wisdom from former Tallahassee City Commissioner Debbie Lightsey. And have fun out in Arizona again. Thanks for coming on, Deb.
Thank you, Tom.
Perspectives produced by WFSU in Tallahassee. Technical assistance today, Taylor Cox and Lydell Rawls back behind the glass. I'm Tom Flanagan. This coming Monday, it's back to school in Leon County, and we're working with the school district folks on next week's program to give us a couple insights on what's new and different for the new school year. So grab your backpack, your peachy folders, and protractor. We'll talk again next week right here on Perspectives.
Audio copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.